meetings in session. We're going to go over this shortly. Again, if you've got phones, please turn them off. Please double check, turn them off. So today's April 4th, Thursday. It's 5:26. We're going to have confirmation hearings today on the Board of Marine Pilots, Board of Pharmacy, Alaska Workers' Compensation Board. We then will have SB 93 Technical Vocational Education Program. It's a short bill. If it's the will of the committee, we'll try and move it out today so it can get up to another committee and be heard. This bill is sponsored by Senator Olson. Then there's SB 25 on employment, filing of labor board information. Try and move that one out today. And then there's HB 71, Alaska Regional Economic Assistance Program. We're going to hear it, hold it till we meet again on Saturday. And then SB 58, cancel insurance on certain abandoned property. We'll hear it, hold it till Saturday. Any questions, senators? No. Ready to roll. Okie doke. So, with that, we have three governor appointees to review for state boards. Members were given the list a week ago for their review. Take a look at the, go through each of the, if you got the list, please take a look at it again. But we have three governor appointees to review for the state boards. And I'm going to go through the boards again and name the folks. And if there's any questions, we can ask the questions. But if there's not, we're going to move through this quickly. So once again, for Board of Marine Pilots, Hans Antonsen. Board of Pharmacy, Terrell Giesel. Alaska's Workers' Compensation Board, Ronald Nalyakuk. Are there any questions for any of these folks? And who is online? I believe we have Hans Antonsen online. Hans, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hans Antonsen. I live at 701 Carlisle Lake Road.
Okay. Are there any questions for Hans? And Hans is a governor appointee for the Board of Marine Pilots. Any questions for Hans? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Antonsen, how long have you been a Marine pilot?
I've been a Marine pilot in Southeast Alaska for almost 25 years.
Okay. And what is your specialty, or what do you plan to bring to the board?
I've attended most of the meetings of the Board of Marine Pilots for the last 20-plus years, and I've participated or attended most of them, and I've got the experience, how the board operates, know the issues that the board deals with, and I'm confident that I can be a reliable and productive board member.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any additional questions? The other two folks, thank you, Mr. Antonsen. The other two folks, once again, Board of Pharmacy, Terrell Giesel, and Workman's Compensation Board, Ronald Nalyakuk, they're not online. Is there any public testimony regarding the appointees? Seeing none, we will close that. And then do we have a motion to move these names?
You do have a motion, Mr. Chair. I move forward the names presented to the committee to the full body for consideration with the understanding that it does not reflect an intent by any of the members to vote for or against confirmation of these individuals.
Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, we'll move these names forward. We take just a very quick at ease. So we're going to take a look at SB 93, sponsored by Senator Olson. SB 93 is an act extending the unemployment contributions for the Alaska Technical and Vocational Education Program. This is the first hearing on the bill. Presenting is David Scott, staff to Senator Olson. Please state your name for the record, Mr. Scott, and please give your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm David Scott, staff to Senator Olson. The bill in front of the committee today, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, extends the sunset to the TVEP, Technical Vocational and Education Program. It extends it 10 years. The TVEP, funds come from the TVEP through what the state collects in unemployment insurance at a rate of 0.15%, and they're allocated by statute. You'll see that they're allocated to 10 entities across the state from Anchorage all the way to northern Northwest Alaska to Southwest Alaska to the interior to Southeast Alaska. Part of the statute that you won't see it in your bill, but it's also in under AS 15835, is that a report has to come to the legislature every year on from each one of those 10 entities. That's part of your packet as well. There are two fiscal notes associated with this, one from the Department of Labor and Workforce Development, the other one's from UAA. You'll see that there's large numbers there, Mr. Chairman, and however, it should just for the committee's sake, that is money that is collected, again, through unemployment insurance. It's held in, it goes to, I'm not quite sure if it goes to the GF or it goes to the trust fund. I'm a little bit uncertain on that, but we do have a member from, we have Bryn Keith, who's the deputy commissioner from Labor. There's also from the University of Alaska, Fred Villa. He's able to answer any questions on the fiscal notes.
And are these folks online?
Fred Villa is online, Mr. Chairman, and Bryn Keith is in the audience.
Senator Machicki.
Mr. Chairman, I only have one fiscal note.
Just take a brief at ease. Senator Machicki?
No, thank you.
Okay. So do we have Mr. Villa online?
Yes, Chair Dunleavy. Fred Villa here for the record from the University of Alaska statewide.
Do you want to give your testimony?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Again, for the record, my name is Fred Villa. I'm an Associate Vice President for the University of Alaska statewide in academic affairs, working out of the Office of Workforce Programs. And I would like to thank the Chair and the committee, and particularly Senator Olson, for sponsoring this legislation and reauthorizing the Technical Vocational Education Program, TVEP, going forward. As you know, the sunset for this is the end of FY14, and this is a critical part of the university's career and technical education programs and offerings that we have, as well as for the state and the regional training centers. The University of Alaska has over 200 workforce development programs. Nearly half of all the programs available through the university system would be considered workforce development programs. We use the TVEP funding to the university for three general areas, one-time funding to get our programs going, or startup funding, and then for bridging from federal funds or other programmatic funds into another source of sustainable funding. The University of Alaska's role in workforce development, actually, there's three. One is to provide pre-college programs to connect youth with career pathways and help them prepare for academic rigors, the academic certificates and degree programs, and third are professional development type programs. Our priorities in workforce development include economic and community development, career pathways that provide a series of connected education and training programs, and then, of course, high-demand jobs. So the way that the university spends that money and utilizes that money to those goals is we actually align with state priorities established by the Alaska Workforce Investment Board, and then we compare those as an initial criteria for the applications for this competitive process within the university, and then have those aligned with the UA rules and guidelines that I just went through. And then we look at the campus priorities and make sure that those are aligned with those individual campuses where those proposals come from. Those proposals are vetted through their campuses based on those criteria, and then are reviewed by a committee that includes the UA Budget and Planning Office, representatives from the three main campuses, and we also include a representative from the Department of Labor and Workforce Investment Board to look at those. Examples of how we've been able to address the pre-college programs include the career pathways and plans of study. Some know the program as Tech Prep, where students can get dual credit both in the high school and in the university system for courses that align to degrees but prepare students in high school and through the university to degrees and for for jobs. Other pre-college programs such as robotics and the Future Educators of Alaska, which are preparing students in rural Alaska for career preparation educational programs to become educators, is another way that we've addressed those pre-college programs. In the area of professional development, we've been able to invest in apprenticeship technology where campuses can provide journeyman-level students, people who have completed an apprenticeship program with university credit, so they can go towards an associate's level degree or beyond with the articulation of those credits to the degree or articulation of credit for prior learning through the apprenticeship technology program. In economic growth, one area that was really considered troubled was the Delta Junction region. When the military at Fort Greenlee backed down, they were looking for opportunities for economic stimulus, and the TVEP funding in partnership with UAF started the Delta Partnership for Progress, which is now a recipient of the TVEP program independent of the university support, but we're still a partner and a supporter through the expertise that we have at the university with the Delta Regional Training Center.
Fred? If you could just wrap up in a minute, we may have some questions, and then we can move on with another testifier.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I was at the conclusion of my remarks. I just wanted to thank you. The university has put this money to work for the state, across the state, in a variety of areas, and we certainly appreciate the opportunity to present any more information that would help clarify how we manage and administer this for the best interest of the state of Alaska. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Villian? Thank you, Fred. We also have online Greg Cashin if there are questions regarding the bill. Any of the senators have any questions?
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Machicki.
I just want to clarify that essentially what the bill is doing is extending the date for 10 years. It's been an extremely successful program. I have some experience with a couple of the different centers, one specifically being Avtec. I think this is an incredible – this system has resulted in incredible progress and success. So I'm very supportive of the program.
Okay. Any questions, members of the committee? Seeing no questions, is there a motion to move the bill?
There is, Mr. Chair. I move Senate Bill 9328-LSO-728A with attached fiscal note. Sorry. One second, please. Did I miss something?
These?
Apologize. Just received my second fiscal note. I'll start over, Mr. Chairman.
Please.
I move Senate Bill 9328-LSO-728A with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations to the next committee of referral.
Any objections? With that, we'll move this out to the next committee of referral, and we will take a quick at ease. In session, we're going to be taking a look at SB 25. It's requested by the governor. Short title is Unemployment Electric Filing of Labor Information. This is a second hearing on the bill. Presenting is Bryn Keith, Acting Deputy Commissioner, Paul Dick, Director of the Employment Security Division, and Aisha Paulson, Assistant Attorney General, Department of Law. Ms. Keith and Mr. Dick are here, are they? Come on up, please. State your name for the record, and then if we have questions, we will ask them.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Bryn Keith, Acting Deputy Commissioner, Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
And for the record, Paul Dick, Director, Employment Security Division, Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
Okay, we heard this bill the other day. Are there questions from members of the committee? It might take a minute here. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure who to go ahead and ask this of, but as you look at this electronic filing that's going on out there, what provisions are being made for either the employer or the employee out in rural areas where you don't have the ability to go ahead and tie into the Internet?
Through the chair, Representative Olson, in our unemployment insurance program, we have telephonic claim filing already, and then which is really successful out in rural Alaska as a medium for filing for benefits, but folks certainly can go the old-fashioned paper route also.
Okay.
As well as on the Internet.
For both employees and employers?
For the claimants for unemployment insurance and then the employers also.
Senator?
Now, just to clarify that I have actually, Representative Olson is actually, wears glasses, is fatter, and has more gray hair than I do. So.
Through the chair, my apologies.
Okay. But there are two of us. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. Senator Chicken, any questions?
I have one question. I asked for a chart, historical unemployment insurance tax rates and the percent points increase, decrease over the years. The bill currently, I believe the max increase can be 0.3% from 1 year to the next. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Vachicki. There's two components to the tax rate. There's one that measures the benefits over the versus wages over the past 3 years, and then in addition, and sometimes called a surcharge, is what we call a trust fund solvency adjustment. That component of the tax calculation has a limitation of 0.3%. So we add the base tax and the surcharge, if you will, to come up with the final tax rate.
Am I, if I may, Mr.
Yes,
Chair?
Yes, Senator.
So on the percent points increase, decrease, is that the combination of the two?
Through the chair, Senator Machiki, that is correct. It's the combined, reflects the combined of both of those.
Thank you.
Additional questions from the committee? Thank you, folks. We have a Senator Machiki. Now's your chance.
I'm probably going to move this along to the next committee. I know there's some folks with some concerns, and I will be asking additional questions. I know the concerns are rather minor, but there are folks worried about the overall impacts of the solvency of a pretty incredible history of a fund that's remained healthy and intact. Do you have any final comments about the changes to alleviate some of those concerns before we move on, if we choose to do that?
Again, Bryn Keith, through the chair, Senator McChickie. Yes, I do have some final comments. The Commissioner of Labor under the bill has a limited discretion under very controlled circumstances to just suspend in part or all of the tax increase from year to year. It's really quite limited and prescribed. So we feel, given those limitations, that framework, we're not in any way jeopardizing the health of the trust fund. The Alaska's Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund has functioned very, very well over the years. We're, for lack of better words, tweaking it a little bit around the margins to make it work a little bit better, so that there's a little bit more money circulating through the economy.
Follow-up, Mr.
Yes, Senator.
So what it represents is 100% of the benefits of covered unemployment compensation debt. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Machiki. So this legislation, under certain circumstances, allow the commissioner to suspend increases. And so what we're looking at here is looking at both components as we look at the rate to suspend just that increase.
I understand. The fund,
the
100% funding of the fund, if you can define what that represents.
Right. The formula as it's currently structured, and the formula doesn't change in this legislation, looks at solvency at a certain targeted rate. It's not 100%, it's actually 3 to 3.3% of wages. And so that's what we use as a target for solvency of the trust fund for that component of the tax calculation.
So 100% rate is 3% of the probable or the worst case benefits of all of those that are represented by the fund.
Through the chair, Senator Majiki, it's 3 to 3.3% is a target rate.
And what percentage are we typically funded? Are we typically funded at that 3%? Have we always been funded at that 3%?
Yeah, and through the chair, Senator Majiki, it is really varied through the years. Sometimes, as you see, reflective of the rates here, where it's going up and down, some years we actually have had credits, the trust fund solvency adjustment credits. It can go up and down. So when the fund builds up, that and it gets beyond that 3 to 3.3% target rate, then we start ratcheting down with a credit on that trust fund solvency. When it's below that 3 to 3.3%, that's where we're adding in trust fund solvency. This year it was 2.2% when we calculated, so we're looking at a 0.8 trust fund solvency to go from the 2.2 to that target 3%. So built into this is a 0.8 trust fund for the 2013 tax rate.
One more.
Mm-hmm.
Have there times that we've struggled with maintaining 3%? I mean, if you pick a difficult employment time, late 80s, do you recall what, if the fund was maintained in an adequate condition at that time?
And through the chair, Senator Majiki, the I guess you termed the bust of the mid-80s, mm-hmm. 86 era, we actually saw our trust fund go down to a pretty low level, but the economy turned around and we gradually built it up to the level that we got now. So, but the trust fund has gone up and down over the years, but the 80s has seen the most severe decrease in the trust fund, and we haven't experienced that level of a decrease since then.
Okay. Further questions?
Thank you.
Any questions, Senator Olson?
Nope.
Seeing none. Thank you. Thank you, folks. We have Catherine Romich in the room. Would you like to come forward, please? State your name for the record and give your testimony.
Thank you. I'm Kathy Romich, CEO of the Juneau Chamber of Commerce. We wrote a letter in support of the governor's proposing this legislation, and just to save time, I'm just going to read the letter that we wrote. Dear Governor Parnell, thank you for all your efforts to keep our state strong by working for small business growth. It's not often these days that we find ways to lower the cost on anything, so we applaud you for bringing forward the solvency of Alaska's Unemployment Trust Fund account. The Juneau Chamber of Commerce represents nearly 400 business members and their employees. It is our job to promote and support a positive business climate not only in Juneau but throughout the state. Our members support legislation that updates and clarifies laws as they relate to doing business in an effort to improve Alaska's business environment. Therefore, we would like to add our support to SB 25. We are pleased that this legislation will ensure that business owners as well as Alaskan workers are not paying more to state government in unemployment insurance taxes than necessary. The Juneau Chamber also understands the importance of compliance with the federal unemployment insurance laws. Maintaining the significant Federal Unemployment Tax Act credit that our employers currently receive is another critical piece of responsible taxation. The federal compliance components of SB 25 ensure that Alaska businesses will not be sending any more money to Washington, D.C. than necessary for the unemployment insurance program. We are also supportive of the greater efficiencies that the Department of Labor will be able to provide by allowing electronic filing of unemployment claims. Thank you for all the work you do on behalf of Alaskans. Sincerely, Kathy Romich, CEO, Juneau Chamber of Commerce. And thank you all, too, for allowing me to.
Senators, any questions for Ms. Romich? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that wishes to testify on this item? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony. Any comments from the committee? Seeing none, is there a motion to move this item?
There is, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Chickie.
I move Senate Bill 2528-GS1494A with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations to the next committee of referral.
Is there an objection at all to this motion?
No.
Seeing none, this is moving to the next committee of referral. Brief at ease. We're back online. Next, we're going to HB 71. It's a bill sponsored by Representative Hughes. HB 71 is an act requiring the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development to file an annual report to the legislature regarding statewide and regional economic development projects and regional development organizations, extending the termination date of the Alaska Regional Economic Assistance Program and providing for an effective date. This is the first hearing on the bill. Presenting will be Representative Hughes and staff Ginger Blaisdell. So with that, folks, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Shelley Hughes, and I represent District 8 Palmer. Happy to be here today in front of my senator and the committee. And thank you for reading that whole title, because you pretty much said it all. Currently, the Alaska Regional Development Organizations, which there are 12 across the state, the program will expire this June 30th, and this bill extends the date to July 1st, 2016. It also adds a new component to require the Department of Commerce, Community, Economic Development to compile an annual report to the legislature each year to improve, the purpose of that is to improve the accountability of the ARTRs and to report how they use state funds to improve the economic health of their regions. And in those reports, they'll provide information regarding statewide and regional projects and activities of the ARTRs, and also include for each individual ARTR information such as on finances, the work plans, strategies, and projects. And they serve as the state's contribution to economic development in the urban and rural areas throughout our state. And they're based on the premise that the best strategy for regional economic development is a locally driven initiative. And where local leaders, they would be best know the regional conditions, the challenges and opportunities, so they're best suited rather than folks seated in Juneau or in Anchorage. And they're best suited to work in partnerships with the state and other entities. And it's an effective model, and local officials and businesses can pool their resources, work together across multiple communities to work on the projects and develop the partnerships I mentioned earlier and provide needed technical assistance. And I could go on, but I know that I'll stop. And if you have questions, and my staff Ginger is here if you want to get into any of the details. And we do have folks from the department here as well.
Again, this is first reading for this bill. Are there questions from members of the committee? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you look at the ARTRs and the financial and the fiscal notes that are related to them, how do we measure the success of these organizations to see that our money is being spent in a worthwhile manner?
Well, thank you for that question through the chair, Senator Olson. They do providing reports to the department. Those presently are not provided to the legislature, and that's part of the new section in the bill. And as they apply for the grants each year, they are expected to meet certain criteria and provide certain plans. And the department can provide more information about that. I will say, to be upfront with you, I did have some concerns about that. It's a 25-year-old program. And so one of the things that I have done is to request an audit through the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, which was approved. And that is one reason why this has a date of 3 years as opposed to 5 years. And we believe that with the new section requiring the annual reports to the legislature, those two elements will bring greater accountability and improvement for the individual arters. Some of them are doing amazing and very excellent things, and there's other arters that could use improvement.
Yeah, what kind of penalties do they have if they're not performing and we see money going down into a hole that's we don't have any benefit from?
Well, they can be denied the grant, and the department could go into greater detail at this time. Other than being denied the next grant, I'm not aware that there are any penalties.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Chick, any questions at this point?
No questions. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, folks. We have next, I believe we have...
Mr. Chairman, can I just make a comment? I just want to thank the bill sponsor for going ahead and requesting the audits, because I certainly have questions about it and their effectiveness.
Thank you. So we're going to testifiers at this point, additional testifiers. Do we have Lorraine Palmer in the building? And Nicole Grew? Please come forward, state your name for the record. And we've got a number of testifiers, so we're going to try and limit it to 2 minutes.
Certainly. Thank you, Chairman Dunleavy. My name is Lorraine Palmer. I'm the Director of the Division of Economic Development, and with me is Nicole Gruey. Nicole is the program manager and has been overseeing the program for about a year. So in the interest of time, I will keep my comments very short to you. Representative Hughes described the program very well. We, the department supports the reauthorization of the ARTA program, and we too firmly believe that the model of it still is a sound model, that local leaders know their resources best and are best suited to lead that effort. And so we appreciate that the concept is still a good concept and true that it does need to have some refinements, and we're prepared to work towards that. I would like to say that the ARTAs are a vital extension of the Division of Economic Development. They are both partners with us, and they are the feet on the ground, so to speak. They're the eyes and the ears of their regions, and we rely on them to report back to us what the strengths are, what the challenges are, the things they're facing in their region. And when they give us that information, it helps us to form programs and initiatives and policies to assist them. And on the other hand, the reverse side, we push out through the ARTAs the programs that can help their economic development efforts. So technical assistance, marketing assistance, the loan programs that are in the finance department to help small business. So we funnel those things through the ARTAs to their local businesses. So it's very much a give and take relationship. And as was noted, is how are we measuring that performance? And we've worked very hard to be partners with them as opposed to being too heavy of a hand of government. We want them to succeed, and we go to lengths to try to help them be successful. But each of those ARTAs performs in a different way because every region they represent is vastly different. So in that being said, we do support this, and we are hopeful that it can go through, because at June 30th, a couple of the ARTAs who rely on that grant money will be significantly impacted should it not be reauthorized. So thank you.
Any questions from members of the committee? Senator Machicki?
No questions.
Seeing none, thank you, folks.
Thank you.
And we have Mayor Merle Sanford from Juneau. Please come forward, state your name for the record, and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senators, good to see you. It's good to be here with you and give you a little bit of perspective on...
Could you identify yourself just for the record?
Merrill Sanford.
Thank you.
I am the mayor from the city and borough of Juneau.
Thank you.
And I'm also a board of directors person with Southeast Conference. And we are Southeast Alaska's ARTA here in Juneau, and all of Southeast Alaska. We stretch and communicate with over 30 communities, from villages of small as 20 to 30 up to Juneau 31,000. The perspective that I want to give to you is we get $65,000 a year to do this ARTA program from Southeast Conference, and we the more important thing is not the money, but how we communicate with all of those different villages and communities, from Yakutat to Metlakatla, over 500 miles. We bring them all together in a couple of different meetings that we have during the year, and then we have many, many teleconferences. As you all know, you come from big, stretched-out areas. You know how hard it is to get good communications. But this ARDR program with Southeast Conference has been a very big success, and we do many, many things trying to develop and push for economic development. The big thing, some of the big things that we've worked on, of course, is the Ketchikan dry dock deal. We pushed that over and over and tried to get that going forward. It's very close to really breaking free here. If we can get a couple of big jobs for them, I think we'll see a really good turnaround for jobs in Ketchikan. In other places, we've worked on the timber issue. You all know how not very many years ago we had 3,500 timber jobs in Southeast Alaska. Now we're down to less than 300 timber jobs. And we've continued to work forward to try to see how we can get the United States Forest Service to bring back the number of trees that we need to have a basic sawmill timber industry in Southeast. With a forest the size of the Tongass National Forest, we don't need to lock it all up, and we should be able to have, you know, 1,000, 1,200 people working in Southeast Alaska in timber-type sawmills. No reason why we can't. And those are some of the things that we push for. In the mariculture area, we've worked hard to develop our sea life culture and everything that's going on. That's just really in its infancy and is really beginning to expand right now. And so those are just some of the things that our ARDR here has accomplished. Again, the main thing is that it brings our communities, big and small, together to communicate with each other, and then to stand together and move forward to present to you people, you know, some of the needs that we have and some of the changes that we have in economic development within our region. So, thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions for the mayor? Seeing none, thank you. And for the record, I should have opened this up for public testimony. Mayor Sanford started that public testimony, so we are open for public testimony. Next, we have Brian Hammond from Nome. Are you online?
I am.
Please state your name for the record and who you're with, and you can begin your testimony. And there's we've got 2 minutes.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Brian Hammond. I'm the Director of Community Planning and Development, and I'd like to speak on behalf of the Bering Strait Development Council, the ARDR for our region. We serve 16 communities and the 20 federally recognized tribes in our region and provide economic development and community planning and small business assistance to the region. Our energy development specialist provides assistance with energy planning, research, and serves as a liaison between our communities and experts at the UAF, the DOE, the Alaska Energy Authority. Our business planning specialist, she provides assistance with startup and expansion planning for small businesses and coordinates workshops throughout the region. She partners with the Small Business Development Center in Anchorage to ensure that individuals in our communities get the assistance they need. We have an e-commerce technician who assists our regional artists in getting their art onto websites such as eBay and Etsy. She helps with photographing their art. A grant writing specialist, he helps in assisting to develop the capacity for our communities to plan for and fund priority projects. We have a planning and development specialist who pulls this all together, who travels to several communities a year and facilitates local economic development planning where the communities decide their priority projects. This position would be difficult, if not impossible, without the ARDR funding. The bulk of our ARDR funds go towards this position. A few of the recent projects that we've been working on, we serve as the local coordinator for Alaska Lemonade Day. We've been working along with several other ARDRs with the Alaska Energy Authority to develop a strategic energy plan for our region. We partnered with Norton Sound Economic Development Corporation in bringing the Alaska Business Development Center to our region to provide tax assistance services in person in each of our communities. We're presently working with a youth stakeholder group in Savunga with the goal of establishing a sustainable teen center based on locally generated revenue streams rather than grant and program funding. The ARDER program is unique and serves differently in different regions. In our region, it's vital because it funds the one position that brings this all together and provides planning on a local scale.
Mr. Hammond, you're going to have to wrap up. Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you for your time and consideration.
Any questions for Mr. Hammond from members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you. This takes us to our next individual, Mayor Luke Hopkins, and I believe it's Denise Brand from Fairbanks. Could you please, if you're there, state your name for the record and begin your testimony?
I am here. My name is Denise Brand, and I'm the Grants Writer Coordinator for the Fairbanks North Star Borough. And thank you for this opportunity, and good evening, members of the committee. The Fairbanks North Star Borough supports House Bill 71, ARDER Program Reauthorization, and we have found that being an ARDER has been extremely valuable for our community and has been of great benefit locally. Our local ARDER Economic Development Commission meets monthly, and they address critical economic issues such as the cost of energy, maintaining military presence in the interior, sustainable agriculture projects, and a wide array of economic development issues. And through ARDER, the Fairbanks North Star Borough has been able to develop an update, of course, the Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy, and has initiated geothermal exploration and completed the biomass cluster project. So the Fairbanks North Star Borough respectfully requests that reauthorization of the ARDER program. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Ms. Brand? Seeing none, thank you. This takes us next to Bill Pop in Anchorage with the Economic Development Corporation. Mr. Pop, if you can state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bill Pop. I'm president and CEO of the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. I'm calling in today to testify on behalf of my board of directors and our organization in support of this bill in reauthorizing the ARDER program. While the ARDER funding only makes up approximately 4% of AEDC's $1.5 million budget in the current year, it is still an important component of our budget. We use this spread out over several different programs, including business retention and expansion, working with national and international site selectors to better educate and to attract their attention in investment opportunities, not only in Anchorage, but throughout South Central Alaska, as well as the interior. It is also an important part of our effort to promote entrepreneurship within the community of Anchorage and the South Central region. But we also see this as a vital part of funding to the ARDERs serving the rural regions. As you've already heard in many of the folks who've testified, the importance of this funding as being a significant portion of their budget. And we believe that that is an important aspect of this program, to provide that core seed funding that they can then use to attract other funding to leverage the difficult effort of economic and community development in many of the communities that they serve. So we urge your continued support for this bill. We appreciate Representative Hughes introducing this legislation and moving it through the House. We hope that the Senate will also support this and keep this important program going forward for the future of the economy of the state of Alaska.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Pop?
I just have one comment.
Yes, go ahead.
Senator Maticki here. Nice to hear your voice, Mr. Pop.
Thank you, Senator. Good to hear your voice too, sir.
Okay, thank you. This takes us on to Marilyn Heddell, Prince William Sound, Prince William Sound Development Corporation. Are you there?
Yes, this is Marilyn Heddell, and I'm a director of the Prince William Sound Economic Development District, and I'd like to voice my support for the ARDER program and hope we have yours too, And it has sponsored many projects in our region, most recently including harbor improvements, new cold storage plant in Valdez, and new tsunami sirens in Tetitlik and Chinega Bay, as well as educational and cultural programs across Prince William Sound. And the grant monies that we get through the ARDR are very important to us and are very important to a crucial to our way of life in Prince William Sound. And we hope that that can continue so that the economic development of our communities can continue. And that's all I have to say, and I thank you for listening.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Ms. Haddell? Seeing none, thank you. Any other folks that need to testify? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony at this time. Any questions or comments from members of the committee? Senator Machicki.
Quick comment, Mr. Chairman. Just I've been on the Kenai Peninsula Economic Development District Board. For full disclosure, I notice my name is still listed, and I have been a supporter of the programs. They've been very active in our community in many different activities, and I'm, again, a supporter of the ARDR program.
Thank you. With that, and barring any unforeseen circumstances, Saturday we'll hear the bill again, and if there are no issues, we'll move it on to the next committee referral. So we're going to set that bill aside. We'll take a brief recess. So on the last bill.
Back. The acting chair. The chair had another meeting. Next we'll be hearing Senate Bill number 58 by Senator Egan, who is here. And the bill is an act allowing an insurer to cancel an insurance policy if property becomes entirely abandoned and the abandonment increases the hazard insured against. With that, I'd like to invite the senator and staff. Please identify yourself
for the record. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm Senator Dennis Egan, representing District P. And with your permission, I would like Dana Owen and my staff just for questions, to answer questions. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, a principle of the insurance business is the insurance or insurers should be able to cancel insurance when circumstances change so that the original risk, the one insured against, has increased. To me, that describes the abandonment of a property or a home. Current status, however, or current statutes do not include the situation on the list of conditions under which an insurance or insurer can cancel a policy. Senate Bill 58 would allow a cancellation for abandonment, as is allowed with all other states. This version of the bill has been worked on by representatives of both the insurance industry and real estate industries. I believe the language we have arrived at allows both groups to protect their interests, and Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I urge your support, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions for Senator Egan or staff? Yes, Senator Olson.
Senator Reid, I can tell by looking at the statement, your sponsor statement, as well as the bill, that the bill certainly seems to be in favor of the insurance companies. Where are the people that own the properties out there? Have they waited on this bill?
Mr. Chairman, I'm Dana Owen, staff to Senator Egan. Senator Olson, the answer to that is that we originally brought this bill up last year, you may remember, and there was quite a bit of interest from both individuals in the communities and members of this committee on that very point. And the real estate agents were quite articulate about objecting to the language we had in the bill at that time. Since then, we have worked with the real estate agents to protect those property owners and make sure that their interests are covered. We think that this language that we have now in the bill will allow insurance companies to exercise the authority to cancel an insurance contract, but will still not allow them to do that precipitously, and will allow property owners who may have gone to Hawaii for 2 months, or who may have gone to visit somebody in another village, say for 2 or 3 months, to not have their insurance canceled.
Okay, continue, Mr. Chairman.
You bet, Senator.
So if I have a boat out there, I've got insurance on, and I decided to leave, and I got stuck on the beach for some reason because the tide goes out, I leave, and all of a sudden I can get my, and it looks like it's been abandoned, all of it, the insurance can be canceled on that?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, it would have to be entirely abandoned under the new language. And what that means is there must be nothing left behind of substantial value. In other words, if it were a boat you were living on and it were your home, one would assume that if you went on board the boat and it had been stripped out, everything's taken away that is of any value, only small items left behind, then you could consider it entirely abandoned. But if there's any property of value there, if you've left behind clothing of value or furniture of value, things like that, then it would be very difficult to claim that it had been entirely abandoned under this language.
Let me rephrase my question again. I've got a boat. Whether I'm living out there or not, it's got things of value. I get stuck. I got a reason to leave, so I get picked up by an airplane, go away, somebody comes along and vandalizes the boat. Obviously, it looks like it's been abandoned. I'm assuming that my boat is still insured, but, and through an involuntary situation like this bill allows, or at least the way I'm reading the bill, I lose my insurance on the boat and I got nothing left. Is that, how do I protect myself?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, the bill requires a period of time to elapse before a notice to be given to the property owner. And I think, and we believe that your abandoning of the boat would not be it would not be recognized under this language that you've abandoned the boat. You're stuck out on a gravel bar someplace, and you've got some time. You can contact the insurance company and tell them you have every intention of getting the boat. You can I think. Well, we'll hear from others who have worked around this, some attorneys who have worked on this language, but it's my understanding, our understanding of the language, that your property would be protected in that case.
So even though I keep up on my payments for the insurance, they can still involuntarily pull the insurance on. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, that would... My reading of the bill, and there are attorneys here who will probably be able to give you a more authoritative reading, but my reading of the bill, and certainly our intention, is that as long as you intend to maintain that property, you will not be able to have your insurance will not be canceled on you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions? I was just looking up, I know, see here that notice is required under AS 2136-220. It's longer than I expected. I assume that there is someone here that perhaps, and I believe you have someone perhaps from the, let's see, we have Mr. Hester here, Deputy Director, Division of Insurance.
Yes, sir.
Are you available for questions as well on this issue? Is that the way you'd like us to go?
Certainly, okay. Mr. Chairman.
If you can please introduce yourself for the record.
For the record, Deputy Director Marty Hester, Division of Insurance. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman.
And the question was if you can please talk about what would constitute an abandonment for Senator Olson.
I believe you're looking at AS 2136-220 that you referenced was kind of long. To break that down for you, through the chair, Senator Olson, I won't go into the age. There's two different ages, that different requirements. It pretty much breaks down to that there's a 30, a 20, and a 10-day requirement that insurance companies are required to abide by under 2136-220, and there's different circumstances to activate those particular days.
Fine, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Additional questions for Mr. Hester? Thank you very much. We're going to open public testimony. And first to testify is Sheldon Winters from State Farm. Mr. Winters, if you can please come forward and identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Sheldon Winters. I'm here from Juneau, and I'm speaking on behalf of State Farm Insurance Company. Just real briefly, State Farm is the largest insurer of homes, which this bill is really directed towards, I believe. But State Farm is the largest insurer of homes in the state, about a third of the market, and the largest insurer of homes in the country. Thanks for your time today. I know time is really precious, so I'll try to be brief and touch on 3 points, and in doing so, I can hope I can answer Senator Olson's questions. And if I don't, I'm available to try to clarify further. So the three things I want to address briefly is what this bill does and what it doesn't do. I want to briefly explain why it's important and fair to the insurance companies and the consumers, and then talk about a little bit of the requirements in the statute and some practical circumstances that really make this the most restrictive situation in the country and, I believe, protects the insured and would protect Senator Olson in his boat situation. So what does this bill do and doesn't do? It, in our mind, is the language and the intent is to allow for cancellation of an insurance when it's truly entirely abandoned. And by that, there's a lot of requirements in the statute. We'll talk about that in a second. But it really does apply to what the layman would think of as abandoned. The properties, you've left it. You've packed up. You've moved. You've gone. You don't intend to take care of it anymore. That's what we're talking about here, and that's the very limited circumstance that this bill is trying to address. And we believe it does. This bill doesn't address a situation where if somebody leaves a home for a period of time, a legislator or staff comes down from Fairbanks for 4 months out of the year. It doesn't address or try to cancel policy on the snowbird situation. It really is the abandoned property situation. The most classic one, and the one we're concerned about, is the foreclosure situation. We heard this bill last year, and there was actually testimony. I think it was everybody was agreeing on the committee that as it stands, with the interpretation now, we literally could have a homeowner say, I'm leaving the door open. I'm not going to turn the heat on. It's the middle of the winter, but I got insurance. It doesn't matter. I'm out of here, and we could not cancel it with the interpretation that's given the current statute. So that's what we're trying to address. I say that this it clarifies that Alaska law should allow for cancellation because the statute, as every state has a statute that allows for cancellation of insurance, Alaska's statute has a couple reasons. There's actually 5 reasons in there, a couple of them that may apply. One is if the insured has a grossly negligent act or omission that substantially increases the hazard insured against. Another is if there's physical changes in the insured property that result in the property becoming insurable. But we've been told by the Division of Insurance that if you want to be very technical and very strict, this would not allow for abandoned property. And so that's why we're here, Senators. Very briefly, and again, I know I'm trying to rush through this, but in every other state, we've had no problem canceling for abandoned property. Some states have statutes just like Alaska, and they allow it. Some states are very broad, and they say you can cancel whenever the property is vacant or unoccupied, and they allow it. And some states say nothing except that you can cancel whenever there's a change in the risk. And I'm going to tell you in a second why that really hasn't been a problem otherwise. But the bottom line is, in our experience, it's allowed throughout the country with a wide variety of statutes. So why this is important, I can give you the long version or the short version. So I'll give you the short version right now. And it's simply, you've heard this mantra before, claims drive rates. When a property is abandoned, left in the middle of the winter with no heat on, the doors left open, nobody taking care of it, the exposure is significant. That increases the claims. It puts upward pressure on rates for all of us because we all participate in that same risk pool. And so the goal here is to keep the claims costs down, manage the risk pool, and hopefully have a better product for all of us. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the requirements of the statute and some of the protections. And let me start by saying, if I may address Senator Olson, we are not talking about a situation where there's a claim or an accident and then the insurance company tries to come in afterwards and cancel the policy. That's not allowed. We are talking about canceling insurance before there's a claim made. And so let me talk about the general parameters here aside from the statute. It's very important to keep in mind that insurance companies sell insurance. That's what we do. Agents want to cover homes. They don't want to cancel policies. So it's counterintuitive to think that there's going to be some agent or some big bad insurance company out there just looking for the chance to cancel a policy. And again, this does not apply after the claim, Senator. The second thing before I address the statute is that in Alaska, insurance policies that were personal lines like we're talking about are in effect for 1 year. They're renewed every single year. So the insurance company can choose to renew or not renew every year for a variety of reasons and doesn't have to be canceled. And that's important, I think, because it limits the scope and the application of this. For example, if an insurance agent finds out that my home has been abandoned in month 11, he doesn't have to invoke this cancellation provision. He can just non-renew in 30 days. It's also important because, remember, he has chosen to renew my policy, let's say January 1 of a particular year. Well, at that point in time, he's probably determined that my home has not been abandoned. So it really narrows the window of when something happens. And it focuses on something must have happened within that 2 month to 10 month or 11th month period that is significant that would cause my agent to want to give my money back and not cover my home. And it's the abandoned property that we're talking about. So if we go through the statute very quickly, it requires entire abandonment. That's language that's more restrictive than anywhere else in the country. That increases a hazard insured against. Entire abandonment has two requirements. It can no longer be occupied by the insured as defined by the policy. If you've got a boat policy, Senator Olson, and it says you're going to live on it, you know, be on it one week out of the year, something like that, and you're gone, not on it the rest of the time, that's not abandonment. It cannot have contents of substantial utility. That's a very onerous requirement. We put that in there at the request of this committee last session, and that's a significant burden to the insurance company. There must be 30 days advance notice, and the statute, I think, has been talked about. There's 30 days, I think it's registered mail. And I think if you're 70 years old, there's another requirement there. But there must be 30 days advance notice. And at the realtor's request, we also put in there you must give notice to the lender if you know who the lender is. So that gives another opportunity for the lender to come in and correct the situation. And then lastly, and this is again from something we worked on with the realtors, and I don't think it's anywhere else in the country, even if you go through all those hurdles and you have a situation where for some reason an insurance agent wants to cancel this policy and gives the notice, all the insured or an agent of the insured has to do is demonstrate that I haven't abandoned it. I'm taking reasonable care of it, and that's all that's required. And in that situation, it's, again, counterintuitive that the agent is going to still want to continue to cancel that policy. Last but not least, over this statute is Division of Insurance Oversight. If there really is this, I think, very, very remote chance that some insurance company does something wrong in this situation, they can always go to the Division of Insurance to correct it. So the bottom line is it's very difficult to imagine a situation where property is being canceled other than the total abandonment / foreclosure situation for all these protections. I hope I answered your questions. If I haven't, I'll try to clarify more. We've worked hard on this. We've worked with the Division of Insurance. We worked with the legislature last year. We had two hearings after the first hearing. We actually pared it down quite a bit at the committee's request, came back, and they gave it 5 thumbs up. Then we worked with the realtors, and we think somewhat biased here, but I think we've actually come up with part of the best statute in the country. I think it's fair, and we thank the Senator for being patient with us. and working with us, and encourage your support.
Thank you. Any other questions, Senator Olson?
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Seeing no questions, we're going to set this bill aside and keep public testimony open for the next hearing. We'll be announcing our next meeting shortly. We believe there's a meeting planned for Saturday. We're going to see how the other schedules come together and to hear bills previously heard and maybe others. Please check basis to find out which bills will be scheduled for Saturday. With that, we are adjourned until the next meeting.